The National Advisory Committee on Immunization, the NACI, recommended this week that all Canadian girls and women aged 9 to 26 should be routinely vaccinated to protect them against the human papillomavirus, the primary cause of cervical cancer in women. This vaccine is the only second anti-cancer vaccine developed, the other being the hepatitis B vaccine a long time ago. What is the evidence to support this recommendation, and what is the scope of this infectious disease? I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Joan Murphy, Chair of the Society of Gynecologic Oncologists of Canada, the Task Force on Cervical Cancer Prevention and Control. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What is human papillomavirus in particular? When people hear about this, is this one virus or many types of viruses?
Well, it's one family of viruses, but as you point out, there are many, many different types within that. We think there are over 50 different types, but two of those types account for approximately 70% or 75% of all the cervix cancers that we see.
What is the incidence and prevalence of the disease in Canada? How many people are now carrying the infection? How many new cases are there reported each year? And is there monitoring that can give us those answers?
Well, we don't have population-based monitoring, but we do have a number of different studies in different groups, demographic groups, that can give us a pretty good picture. We think that the time of highest likelihood of contracting the virus is in the first few years after a girl or woman becomes sexually active. We also think that most women will have contact with the disease or the infection at some point in their lives. It's estimated that between 75 and 80% of women have the virus through a sexually transmitted mechanism at some point. Now, the vast majority of those will clear the virus by their own defenses mm-hmm. without any significant side effects. Others will have side effects which, in the grand scheme of things, are relatively minor, but are of concern, and that includes things like genital warts. But two or three of the different types of the virus, in fact, predispose to cancer. There are approximately 1,400 cervical cancers in Canada a year, although there are many, many, many more women who have the precancerous changes called dysplasia, or carcinoma in situ, than actually go on to get cancer.
So for these women that have carcinoma in situ or even the earlier precancerous changes, what are some of the social and economic impacts of HPV on each person individually and on the country as a whole?
Right. Well, first of all, you know, we have effective screening in place, and it's effective to varying degrees depending on how well organized the programs are, et cetera. And that is a significant burden on our healthcare system, both in terms of dollars and in terms of human resources. Having said that, the screening systems have been highly effective and will continue to be necessary even after this vaccine is in place, although there's a lot to talk about there. There are a number of changes that might be appropriate mm-hmm. down the road. From an individual point of view, it's very stressful to be faced with the potential of cervical cancer. So when a woman gets a report of an abnormal pap smear, which is how these things are usually picked up, if they are picked up, there's a lot of anxiety. Very often these abnormalities can start when a woman's very young and may not have completed her family. She may not even have begun her family. And so obviously fertility is always in her mind a question. Now, in medical terms, very often fertility is not truly at risk because there are such good treatments available that if a woman is appropriately screened and the problem is found early and everything else falls into place, she may well be successfully treated with fairly little downside for her. In women who have cervical cancer, however, up until the last 10 years or so, there have been no treatments available that could allow her to retain fertility. There are now, in some areas, what we call fertility-sparing treatments for even cervical cancer. However, they pertain only to a limited part mm-hmm. of the population. So the best part about this vaccine is that we hope that we can absolutely prevent most of all this stuff going on, most of these anxieties, because if we can make women and girls immune to the virus, these things just aren't going to happen down the road, at least not to the extent they do now.
Now, with respect to the prevention aspect, what were some of the clinical studies that the NACI used to support their recommendation?
Well, there were studies that looked at immunogenicity, and that is looking at basically blood levels in girls and women of antibodies to the HPV. And there are studies that look at the prevention of abnormal pap smears. There are two, basically there are two vaccines at play, one of which has already been through the approval process and to which the NACI guidelines specifically refer, and another one that is currently in the approval process but not as yet through it. But both of these vaccines are extremely successful at achieving immunogenicity and also in preventing abnormal pap smears.
Go ahead.
Well, the studies didn't follow through to the prevention of cervical cancer because that's a process that takes many, many years. So the abnormal pap smear, the dysplasia, is considered in these trials a surrogate, if you will, for cancer.
What is the overall efficacy of the vaccine? If someone were to go and have the vaccine series, what could they expect with regards to level of protection? And as well, what is a specific vaccine schedule?
Well, the schedule, in fact, requires three different injections. The vaccine that's available to us now is at day 0.0 a month later and 6 months later. So that is an issue. The three injections is a lot a little more formidable for most people than one, but still quite within the realm of what most people would be prepared to do. I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought on the last part of your question.
The efficacy.
Efficacy. Yes. Well, in the studies available to date, it appears to be 100% efficacious and also extremely safe. Now, these have been done in large populations, but not huge populations. So who's to say that there won't be some issues that arise down the line? However, it's an extremely safe and extremely efficacious vaccine based on studies to date.
And is this vaccine an attenuated strain, or is this sort of conjugated type of vaccine?
It in fact contains no viral DNA whatsoever. It basically contains what we call viral-like particles. And so basically what have been manufactured are these particles that appear in every way to the body from an antigenic point of view, like the virus, but they do not contain viral DNA. So the possibility of getting, for instance, an infection or a reaction to the DNA is not there with these two vaccines.
Now, I wanted to for our listeners to have a good understanding when you were talking about 100% efficacious. The vaccine itself covers what percentage of the viruses that would lead to cervical cancer and genital warts?
Well, that's highly relevant. Thank you. The viruses that currently can be vaccinated against of the cancer-causing viruses are numbers 16 and 18. And as I said earlier, we believe that these two types of HPV virus are probably responsible for about 70% of cervical cancers. And that means that even if we assume and if the data at present bears out that there's 100% efficacy, women still are at some risk of having one of the other types. And for that's the reason I say cervical cancer screening, pap smear screening as we know it today, will never go away. We think that it may well be modified down the road, but we don't even know that for sure as yet. But this vaccine does not offer 100% protection against cervical cancer. It does appear to offer approaching 100% efficacy against the two major culprits, if you will, in lower genital tract cancers. We talk about cervical cancer, but we know that vulvar and vaginal and anal cancers are also related. And there's good evidence to suggest that some head and neck cancers and other cancers are also HPV related. So there may be even more protection from these particular types than we know at present.
Can the vaccine be used for women who have already had an infection that led to cervical changes suggestive of precancerous change? That is, that they've contracted human papillomavirus. Is it still beneficial for them to have a vaccine?
Well, that's a very vexing question, certainly for the public policymakers who are going to have to decide who they're going to pay for this virus, this vaccine for. Having said that, the NACI guidelines actually do address this point. Women who have already been sexually active, the vaccine is going to have its maximum impact on women and girls who have not had sexual exposure to the virus. On women who have been sexually active and therefore theoretically at least may have been exposed, it appears unlikely from evidence present to date that they would have had multi-strain infections. So they may, at least in theory, they may well benefit. And as such, the recommendations include that group of women. We unfortunately don't have a good way, a reasonable or accurate way of testing as to whether or not a woman A, has been exposed, or B, has immunity against either of these vaccines. So we're going to have to go on spec, if you will, on the statistical likelihood. And it appears that multi-strain infection is relatively uncommon, and so there will be some benefit. Again, having said that, the caveat is that if you didn't have the vaccine before you became sexually active,
right,
then you could still be at risk for one of those viral strains that were contracted before the vaccine was given.
And finally, is the Society of Gynecologic Oncologists of Canada recommending to governments as part of their position that they should be covering this as a part of a routine immunization schedule for it to be added into the children's guidelines for vaccinations?
Our society, whose mandate is to improve the cancer care of women across this country, in gynecologic cancer at least, we're trying very hard to motivate the provinces and the territories to mobilize their policies, to get the policies in place, and to implement this vaccine for all of those women and girls who will benefit from it.
Dr. Murphy, I'd like to thank you very much for giving us a really excellent synopsis of the human papillomavirus vaccine. And I think this is, I fully support your recommendations. In fact, we offer this vaccine in our office already to our patients. So I think this is an advance for women's health.
Well, thank you. It's great to be able to get the message out.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Dr. Joan Murphy is chair of the Society of Gynecologic Oncologists of Canada Task Force on Cervical Cancer Prevention and Control. Coming up, Dr. Ronald Barr and teen cancer. What's going on with regards to diagnosis and treatment? Are they falling behind compared to other groups in our country? I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call.